to Vassals of Kingsgrave. My name is Glenn Dacos Rivers from Discord, a podcast of Ice and Fire forums. Today, it will be a discussion of the 2023 Disney reimagining of The Little Mermaid, and we might touch on earlier adaptations and, of course, the original short story. I am joined by...
Hi, it's David, David HHH on the Discord, the forums, and whatever else.
So I guess we will talk about, of course, the new movie, but I thought we could start by, I guess, discuss where it all started. So I think it's common knowledge that Disney were in a bad place around late 80s. They had released quite a few movies that did not do well. Although Oliver and Company did okay-ish, but this movie brought, of course, Disney back to the mainstream and, of course, caused the Disney Renaissance, which is The Little Mermaid. When, I guess my question to you, David, when did you first watch it?
I'm trying to think now. I think I saw the original in the theaters. I'm pretty sure I did. So, but I like vague recollections because this was a very long time ago, you know. And I've since watched it, of course, on video and all that too. But I think I saw it in the theaters the first time.
Oh yeah, that's good. This one skipped me by for a long time. I think maybe because of when I was born. This movie was released in 1989, so I would have been about 10 months old when this movie was released.
And you weren't going to the theaters?
Movies like Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King. So, well, actually, most of the 90s Disney movies, I had them all on VHS tape and then later DVD. So with those movies, I think I was just at the right age, whereas The Little Mermaid... I didn't have that on VHS. I remember maybe I might have been about 10, 11. I did start thinking, oh, you know, I've never watched that. And I did try actively looking. You know, I had access to the Disney Channel. I had access to... we have a service called Sky Movies. I had access to that. So I remember looking through like TV guides for weeks thinking, oh, come on, this is a movie from like 10 years ago. I must be able to find it, but it just never came on TV. I remember, quite oddly, this is a movie that is, you know, very, you know, it's like, I guess people would say, oh, it's for girls. Even though I watched, you know, Beauty and the Beast, I watched the Swan Princess trilogy. Yeah. I had, you know, quite a lot of girl type movies which I watched, but I was quite embarrassed to say, oh, I quite want to watch The Little Mermaid. So that's why I didn't want to, you know, buy it on DVD.
Your mom was thinking, okay, something's going on here.
Yeah, because especially because yeah, because I was, I guess, going into high school as well. So I was thinking, oh, I'm getting a bit old for these types of movies. So I don't think I watched The Little Mermaid until I was 15. You know, I eventually managed to track it down. It came on, I don't think it was any major channel, but it was some channel on TV was showing it. So I watched it there. But with the Disney Channel, I remember watching so much rubbish on that. So many DCOMs, and you know, you would have certainly. I definitely watched The Little Mermaid 2 before I had a chance to watch The Little Mermaid years before. Cool. In fact,
spoilers.
Although I never watched, I never got around to watching The Little Mermaid 3.
I think I ever saw 3 either. I definitely saw 2.
I think mm-hmm. I had two on tape, or I rented it or something. I don't remember what. Because that was direct to tape, I think. Mm-hmm. Disney was doing that back then.
But eventually watched the movie, really enjoyed it. And of course, we're in a phase just now where a lot of the Disney classics are being remade. So we previously talked about Aladdin when we watched that in 2019. What are your views on Aladdin now? Have you rewatched it since back then?
I have rewatched like scenes. Like a lot of times with musicals, I will keep them and just pull out like, oh, I feel like watching Prince Ali or, you know, whatever. I'll pull out a song more often than watching the whole movie. I think I may have watched the entire thing with a friend after we podcasted. But since then, I pretty much have only just watched scenes here and there when I'm in a mood for some fun, you know?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
And well, I'll probably end up doing that with Little Mermaid.
Well, that reminds me, when you and I talked about Aladdin, you mentioned that the stage show, that you had watched the stage show. And after that happened, Disney Plus, there was an announcement about Disney Plus that they were planning to have a live recording of the Aladdin stage show and put that on Disney Plus. But then COVID happened and that plan was in, you know, tatters, and then they've never done it since then. I know I have looked on Google or various sources to try and find, are they doing this? But so far they haven't. But I know they have done it with shows like Hamilton and the Newsies. So I hope one day they do it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if they do it, if they'll bring back the original Broadway cast or just take whoever's in it right now.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I will say the original Genie, Michael James Scott, was absolutely brilliant. In fact, I got lucky, and not only did I see him on Broadway, but when the tour came to Boston, originally it was supposed to have the original Aladdin, but on the Boston leg of the tour, they swapped him out with someone else, I forget who, but they brought back the original Genie for it. And I was like, yes, we got to see the original again, because he was so, so good. For Little Mermaid, have you seen it in any other ways? I've definitely been to the Disney ride at both Disney World and Disneyland, Florida and California.
That was my mum's favorite ride. Not, in fact, I think you mean, right, there is a ride where you are, they play the songs and you're just on you sit down and you just glide through the ride.
Right.
Not that one I'm talking about. There's another one which is like a stage version of it.
Uh-huh.
That you know, you've got actors and they act out the scenes, and then you've got the movie on. Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about. That was my mum's favorite ride.
There have been a few. There was originally a like submarine. Yeah, in Japan they have a whole like section of the park that's like devoted to Little Mermaid, and there's a whole indoor section, and they actually have a Little Mermaid show there, with of course poor unfortunate souls being the show topper with a big giant animatronic. All Ursula. Right. Was really cool. And then Florida, the last time I went to Disney in Florida was about 2013, I think it was, and the ride was new, and it's a definitely, you know, like a people mover type dark ride, you know, like Haunted Mansion, where you sit in the clamshells and then that takes you through the ride, and that's absolutely magical. I mean, I rode that. The lines were huge because it was new during the day, but then at the end of the night, all the kids had gone home, so I literally just rode it again and again and again, like 10 times in a row, singing every time, of course, especially Part of Your World. But of course, the showstopper room is the entire room of Under the Sea with all the different fish and animals dancing and singing and playing instruments around you, unlike in the remake.
Yeah, well, with the remakes, just to go back to Aladdin for a minute, I think at the time when I watched Aladdin, it may have been on the podcast, or maybe I just said this to a friend, but I said something like, oh, well, it was really good to watch, but I think if, you know, I ever want to get my Aladdin fix again, you know, I think, or really want to watch Aladdin, I would just watch the 1992 movie, which I guess I fought for, you know, when I watched Beauty and the Beast, I felt the same, that I preferred just watching the classic, whereas this new one was just like a one-time thing. But actually, Aladdin has grown into one of my favorite films. So I've watched, as in the 2019 movie.
Yep.
So I've watched it maybe six times since the cinema. Have it on DVD. I've taken it on holiday twice. The last time, watched it on the plane, and then I watched it like during the stay in the hotel. So really enjoy Aladdin. So I feel I'm thinking, The Little Mermaid, certainly it's a movie I want to watch again, but not quite sure like how durable it'll be. Does it have that lasting power? What are your thoughts?
I mean, so in general with the remakes, I think kind of my point of view is, unless you're going to update, modernize, or change it somehow, then why bother? And I think in general, that's kind of like how I think about all the remakes. Like Little Mermaid, they definitely did a lot of updating, which I'm sure we're going to talk about. Yes. And Aladdin, they definitely did, and they expanded it as well. And same thing with Beauty and the Beast. Not as much with Beauty and the Beast, but somewhat. And I think that's why those were my favorites, where I feel like Lion King, they didn't... it was basic. I mean, maybe part of it is just because it was all CGI, because there's no humans in it. That it didn't feel like they updated much. I mean, again, Beyonce a song, but you know that like there isn't too much. So I think that's probably why that was my least favorite, although it was commercially successful of them all in terms of box office. But I don't know. I mean, I feel like all of these, like to me, the new ones have kind of superseded the originals. I mean, I know that's blasphemous to some people, but I feel like, you know, giving the characters more depth and more motivation is a good thing, and certainly the new songs. So I'm definitely supportive of the new ones, especially if they can modernize and take out some of the more, I don't know, sexist elements and stuff.
Well, when I watched The Lion King, well, I was watching it in the cinema, and in my mind I thought, okay, this movie's close to 2 hours, so there must be a lot of new content, because the original was about 80 minutes.
Right.
But then besides, like you were saying, maybe a few like small moments, that the song that Nala had, and you know, a few, well actually technically it wasn't Nala, it was just Beyonce. But
right.
aside from that scene happening, and maybe a few other small things, I didn't see where that extra 40 minutes came from.
Right, yeah.
The Little Mermaid, so original movie 80 minutes, this one 135, so almost an extra hour of content.
Right.
Of course, we've got the three new songs, there's slightly tweaked versions of the classic songs. I could sort of see it with this movie, that they did add a lot more content, changed a lot of things. So I can sort of see where the extra time came from with this one.
Well, they gave time to actually build the relationship, and the character definitely added and expanded. It wasn't just, oh, they're beautiful, I love you. You
know? What about the short story? Have you ever read that?
I don't know if I've read the official short story. I mean, I know of it and I know what happened in it, but I don't think I have. Although I have seen, as I sent you a picture, I did see the Little Mermaid statue in Copenhagen.
Yes. Well, when I had watched the Little Mermaid, back then I was a big geek. You know, IMDb, I would go on that practically every day. IMDb was much better back then because they had the forums, which they don't have now, so I never go on IMDb. But
probably for the best, given how toxic so much of these discussions have been. But
that's true. Box Office Mojo also was much better back then because they had forums, which they've taken away. Yeah. But IMDb, you know, I would go to the trivia section. I think they mentioned a few things about the short story there. And then I went to a few different websites to find out about, you know, their original story. Well, not their original story, but there was a 1975 version animation in which it practically retold the short story, not the Disney version. So that's where I learned, you know, how it actually, you know, the
interesting. Given how dark the original the story is, it's interesting story, they chose to make a cartoon of that.
Yep. And I only learned this within the past 2 weeks. I seen it on Facebook that the original story, Hans Christian Andersen, of course, wrote it, but people believe that he had written that story because he was in love with another man, and it was an allegory for how he felt at the time. Because he wrote the story in which, of course, the mermaid is in love with the human, becomes a human, but then, of course,
loses her voice.
she might, of course, she loses her voice, but then she also might become sea foam. Then, of course, the I guess main difference when the sisters make the deal with the sea witch and lose all their hair, so that, of course, the mermaid has that chance to kill the prince and save herself, but she chooses not to do it.
Dark story.
Yes.
But so most of Hans Christian Andersen's are.
Yeah. Well, I did, I think when I was a bit older, so maybe 20, 21, I did buy a short story collection from Hans Christian Andersen. I know I read The Little Mermaid, and maybe I might have read The Emperor's New Clothes, and maybe The Snow Queen, but I don't think I really, of the like 600 pages this was, I might have only read like 50 pages of it.
Anything else about the original movie? Other than it was fabulous and amazing songs, and that was kind of the beginning of the era of Ashman and Menken until we lost poor Ashman.
How could I forget? Yes. Yep, exactly. So Howard Ashman, who, yeah, because they had come from Broadway, and that was their
Little
idea.
Yeah, they did Little Shop of Horrors, which is always one of my favorites, and I never understood why it seemed so similar. But now now that I'm older, I only recently found out that they did that. I was like, wow, how did I not know? No wonder I love the music so much. Because, like, for me, this era of Disney is, like, my era. You know, starting with Little Mermaid, although really more with Beauty and the Beast, especially as the animation got a lot better by the time of Beauty and the Beast, and particularly Aladdin. But Aladdin, Lion King, like, these are, like, some of my very favorite movies of all time. I would probably consider the original Aladdin my all-time favorite.
Oh, perfect. I would say the same. So, Aladdin does typically, you know, when I think of Disney movies, I usually think, what was my favorite? And Aladdin usually does go towards the top of the list, although I really love Hercules, so those two sort of fight one another. Like, sometimes I'll say, oh, it's Hercules, sometimes I'll say Aladdin. Occasionally I'll say, oh, Beauty and the Beast.
Of all of them, Lion King is probably the most beloved of them all and probably did the best at the box office, but they're all
That's
good.
Just the single most successful IP of all time.
Right.
It's got the movies covered up, so of course, box office, VHS, it sold like 50 million VHS copies, and now it's, of course, a really successful Broadway show. Well, the most successful theatre show. Plus, of course, the 2019 movie, which did a lot, like over $1.5 billion.
Right. Made a lot. And then there were all the sequels, and there was...
Could we forget?
And then there's even like sequel cartoons with his kid on Disney Channel, I think, or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this whole era was epic.
Yeah, both The Return of Jafar and The Lion King 2. Like, I remember all my class talked about those movies as if, you know, they weren't just brought out on video. They were actually major movies.
Well, they were at the time were big for home video. Yeah. Although, I don't know if you know this, none of those sequels, including the Little Mermaid one, were actually made by any of the original animators. They were done by completely different studios overseas, the same ones sometimes that did the cheap TV shows. Mm-hmm. Oh, you could definitely tell. And they were made by the same people who made the later TV shows, so...
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Alan Menken, he does come back. And, of course, we've brought in Lin-Manuel Miranda for, of course, the new songs. So... I guess we could move on to that. And of course, the main discussion around the 2023 movie, I thought we would start with the songs. So of course, musical movie. So one of the most memorable thing is the music.
Oh, that's definitely what I go for.
So starting with the new songs to the movie. So those that you won't find in the original movie.
Yep, yep.
So I guess three. If we start with three new songs.
Three plus some sequels.
Reprise. If we start with Well Done Chartered Waters. So of course Prince Eric gets a song.
Yep. What a concept. He gets a song. He gets a song along with a personality. Hey.
I actually like his song. I mean, it's definitely auto-tuned, and you can tell, and he definitely, like, cracks a lot, like, whoa, you know, but other than that, I actually really like it. I've listened to it a bunch of times since, and even, like, just as a music to listen to, and I actually really like it. It's very, very Broadway. I mean, of all of them, it's definitely the least, like, Lin-Manuel Miranda and the more, like, Alan Menken of them. You know, when, it definitely it gives him an "I Want" song to go with "Party of Your World" for her.
That's true. When I had gone on to Spotify the week before because I knew the soundtrack was released, so gave it a few listens. I didn't like "Well Done Chartered Waters," but it is a song that did grow on me. So. I remember just like a few days ago, it just came into my head and I'm singing along, yep. along to it. So even though it was one that I could listen to, it wasn't bad, but I sort of thought, oh, it's not really going anywhere. And then I watched it in the movie and same, I didn't really, you know, dig it that much, but it was a song that I was like, you know, singing along to or like in my head thinking thinking about. So it is one that certainly a grower, that one.
And he can actually kind of sing, I gotta say. He was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Better than I expected. I mean, he's not just a pretty face. Like, he actually can sing that. A very pretty face, but...
I've not watched him in anything. I know that he was in a really popular British show called, I think it's World on Fire he was in, but no, I've never seen him before.
I had no idea who he was before this, so
well, actually we'll talk about that in a bit, but just around cast and controversies around cast. The next song for the first time.
It's interesting. It has like a kind of Caribbean feel to it. It definitely It's weird, though, because it feels like they wrote this song and then in the movie itself, they realized, like, as they went to film it, wait a minute, she has no voice here. So she has to, like, we don't actually get to see her singing it, which is a kind of bizarre concept. But I like it. It's good. It's not the best. It's definitely, I would say, not as good as almost any of the originals, but it's still enjoyable.
It's, for me, it's not even one that I could say that's grown on me. I would say definitely my least favorite of the new three songs.
Yeah, I liked it, but it's not one like I'm going to go back and listen to 100 times. Like I'll watch it in the movie and I'll pull it out once in a while, but it's not like great.
I mean, it does what it's supposed to do, though, which is, you know, move the plot along and give the whole dynamic of being, you know, in this whole new world. Something I think they'd get to in the original part of your world is this: people don't realize, like, you know, if she's underwater and never seen humans, she won't know anything. Every single thing she sees and does is completely new to her. It's got to be the biggest sensory overload ever, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what this song is about. And then, of course, add on top of that the whole disappointment at the end that he has when she doesn't have her voice. But the heartbreak. It's funny how quickly that song turns, right? You know, it goes from this, ah, nice for the first time, to like, oh, I'm going to cry now.
But what I guess the most talked about new song is the Scuttlebutt. So
undeniably Lin-Manuel Miranda song of them.
Yes, I mean, I felt undeniably. The same.
I mean, that boy has a way around words, you know. He just
It was I guess interesting that they brought in a bit of rap to it. It's definitely my favorite of the three songs, and listened to it a lot when I was listening to the soundtrack.
I think you're one of the few, because everyone online seems to hate it. Like, every article I've seen on the movie is like, and can we all agree that the Scuttlebutt sucks and they shouldn't have put it in there? But I feel like that's going to be one that the kids are going to absolutely love.
Well, the thing that annoyed me the most about it is I had this vision in my mind that when I was listening to the song, I thought, this is what will happen in the movie. And actually, I felt the same with For the First Time, that it feels like it should be more visual. So when Scuttle is talking or singing about people gossiping, oh, the prince is marrying, you know, some unknown person, that we should have seen that. We should have seen people talking. And, you know, there's a few other points where things are described, but we don't really see that. Whereas I felt that would have added for me that element that we would have seen people doing what they're singing about. Right.
Well, I think they wanted to focus more on the character that we're seeing rather than the plot. But mm-hmm. Although it's a very plot-heavy song. I do. The one thing is, I'm not a rap fan in any way whatsoever, but if there was anyone I was going to like, it's Lin-Manuel Miranda, because I like clever lyrics, and he has such a way with words and rhymes, and his lyrics are just so smart. So that's the one thing I like about this song, is it's very Lin-Manuel Miranda.
I guess, so, Under the Sea. So, not many changes to that one. The one that I picked out is that I don't think there's any lyric changes to it. But
I don't think so.
At a point when they do the, you know, the Under the Sea chorus, it's sung by Ariel rather than, of course, the Undersea Creatures. That's the one thing that I picked out. But did you notice any other changes?
Well, I mean, I think there's a difference when we're talking the song as a song and how it plays in the movie. I think in terms of in the movie, I think this is the song that's probably the biggest victim of the choice that Disney made a few years ago, that in all of these remakes, the animals they were going to try to make as like photorealistic CGI as possible. And I think it really changes this song a lot, because let's face it, having very realistic animals playing musical instruments would look really stupid. You know, it would look really just odd and weird. And I think a few things really hurt by that. That and, of course, Les Poissons. It would be really hard to, you could tell why they cut that out of this, because, you know, having a very real fish and a guy talking about how much he wants to slash him up and eat him and fricassee him and all that stuff. So, yeah. I mean, there's still a little of that in here, because when he says, you know, with that one verse about how they're going to eat us on the shore. But I think that if in many ways in this song really tamed it down, they could still dance, but they couldn't, you know, you couldn't have the over the top with them playing every instrument in the world and singing and chorus lining and everything. You only had the dance aspect of it. So I think a lot of people felt like this was a lot lower energy because of that. And there's some truth to that. but I still like it. It's fun. You know, it's just there's something just so over the top about the original Under the Sea, and like, and they actually captured it perfectly on the ride at Disneyland at Disney World. But it's just this moment of everything going on and pure chaos all around you, and I feel like that's way toned down in this. I think his performance and all the performances are great, and I do like adding Ariel singing to it rather than just being a spectator. But it is a little like disappointing after the original, only because but I think that was like I don't think the director could have done anything else, because again, live action would have just been weird.
That's true. Well, one thing that I noticed is just how, well, first thing I said to a friend when Flounder came on screen, he looks nothing like Flounder.
Right. He looks like an actual flounder. What a concept.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that decision really changed a lot of all three of the main characters where that happens, you know, between Flounder. So Poor Unfortunate Souls, the verse they changed, there's a whole verse where Ursula is basically trying to tell Ariel that, no, oh, don't worry, losing your voice is no big deal because men don't actually like women that talk too much and have too much to say. And I mean, I see both sides of this discussion. I mean, on one hand, a lot of people have, you know, people who get angry about being too PC and whatever, I get that they think that it's like, and they're justifying it in the original by saying, no, they're just showing how evil Ursula is, that she's tricking Ariel and trying to convince her and seduce her by saying this. But I mean, there's still a lot of truth to that, because a lot of guys do want that. And I like that it was Mencken's decision to change this. He's said it in like every interview, that he said that, you know, if even one girl thinks that she has to be silent to keep men happy, like that's awful. So I like that they changed that and took that verse out, because while there is some uncomfortable truth in it, it's a bad message to send to little girls, right? An awful message. Like, just shut up. Just shut up and be pretty, you know?
Well, I guess messages that things send and, you know, modern, I guess, sensibilities also leads us on to Kiss the Girl.
Uh-huh.
So I guess this one was widely reported that the song was being changed to incorporate consent. So This is one that I did notice, you know, there's a little lyric change in which, you know,
The original says like you don't even have to ask her, like in the original, it literally says that in it. And here they actually just changed it to go on and ask her, which, tiny little change, but it makes a big difference in what you're saying to people.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. It was something like in the original, it was like, yes, you want her, look at her, you know you do. Possible she wants you to. There's one way to ask her, and as in go and kiss her.
Right. There's literally like, it you don't need a word, she don't need a word, not a single word, the girl. I mean, that's pretty, yeah. There's certain things in old songs that just are very cringy today, and I think it's good that we've grown and as a people and understand that now, so, and especially coming from Disney, which is directed at kids, you know?
But that's a change where I know people would have been saying, oh, that's too PC, that's too woke.
I don't care.
I guess. But you would say that you're happy with the change? Or was it necessary?
I thought it's fine. I mean, I think it hurts. I think the changes probably hurt Poor Unfortunate Souls more, because you lose a whole verse and a villainous bit from Ursula. But I think in here it doesn't really make much of a difference other than improving it. You know, I think if you're going to change things, improve them. And I think in this case, it absolutely does. You know, it doesn't, I don't think you lose anything by going from go on and ask her to, you know, don't take a word. Like, I don't think you lose anything there, where you could argue that in Poor Unfortunate Souls, you're losing a whole verse of the song. But luckily, she's so great, it doesn't matter. But
I know that, of course, the Daughters of Triton song that wasn't in this movie. Yep. What were your feelings towards that?
I don't even remember that song, so I don't care that much. I mean, I know what it is, but I don't remember. Like, I don't remember anything about it, other than that it existed.
I read this clickbait type article. This must have been about 3 months ago. It said fan favorite song missing from new remake, which we know it is not a fan favorite. But I thought, the Daughters of Triton song, certainly not my favorite. So I didn't really miss it. I was surprised they still had the sisters in the movie, mm-hmm. because I did think you could probably cut them without it affecting the story, aside from the fact that Ariel being the youngest, but then even if she was the only daughter, then I don't think it would, you know, change much in the story.
Yeah. Well, they don't really get much screen time at all. Like, they're more in the background than anything. I mean, they have like a scene or two, but that's about it. So it's like they're almost irrelevant in the new one.
And then, of course, you've got the iconic part of your world.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they tried to recreate as much as possible the part of your world scene where she leans on the rock and the wave splashes. Right. I thought that was really well done.
That's the first reprise.
Oh, the reprise. You're right. Mm-hmm.
And they added another reprise, just like they did in Aladdin.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that is definitely one of my all-time favorite Disney songs. So, and she absolutely nailed it. In fact, I think for a lot of the people who were doubting her, just hearing her sing that they were very smart to put that in the trailer, because I mean, that's probably the song that people are most emotionally attached to of all of these original songs. Although people do like both Under the Sea and Kiss the Girl, but I think that's the one that particularly girls latch on to, and of having course. Her sing that, and she does such a brilliant performance. I've actually watched a few vocal coach reacts videos, and how they talk about every little moment of the little things she adds and does and her choices and how great she is in it. So,
and she's done some live versions of it too.
Yep, at Disneyland and a few
other. That's one. The trailer came out, this, you know, part of the song was in it, and then this is the first music video / song from the soundtrack that they released. So mm-hmm. probably a good month before the soundtrack mm-hmm. came out, you had a chance to listen to this one. So right. I did, you know, it is a great rendition of it. Mm-hmm. You know, seeing it on screen, that was great. What are your thoughts on, just in general, with The Little Mermaid? I'm sure you've heard that at one point they done a test screen. You know, this is the 1989 movie. They done a test screening and the audience were really bored of it. And they absolutely. Soundtrack. Good soundtrack. Certainly I've had a few listens on Spotify. I don't know if maybe in like a year I'll be saying, oh, I've listened to the soundtrack the other day, because it has been years since I've listened to the Aladdin soundtrack again.
Well, I do think that a lot of the performances in this are even better than Aladdin, although her name who played Jasmine was incredible. But in this, I think the whole cast is really good. Right. I think in this, the whole cast is really good, which is what we're going
to get into. They are, definitely. Well, do you want to talk about casting controversies?
That's sort of inevitable, right? Like it's a part of the casting discussion. Like it's so sad that every time a black woman gets to do anything in the media, they have to get shit on by the world. It just sucks.
She's
incredible.
She is. She's really great. Had you heard of her before this announcement?
I know I've heard her name, but I don't listen to that kind of music very much. I don't listen to a lot of pop music anymore, so I'm mainly into just dance music these days, so I'm not the target audience.
Well, I think aside from the fact that why is why have they cast a black woman? The second thing that people mentioned was how similar her name was to Halle Berry.
Right. Yes, exactly.
And some people thinking Halle Berry was playing Ariel in this movie.
Right. I think one of the things, though, that I think was great about the casting is that of all of these remakes, this is the other than Beyonce, this is the first person they cast specifically as who's a singer more than an actor. And it certainly pays off. You know, she sings her heart out and with so much nuance and everything, and she's just incredible. And like I said, I think people seeing the video and listening to her sing definitely won over a lot of people who were skeptical. I mean, you're never going to win over the worst people, but don't even try.
Yeah. And if we delve into the box office at the moment, that's the one thing that I'm annoyed with, that it's not doing so well. And then people that are saying, well, they shouldn't have cast a black Ariel, they'll be like, told you guys.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's interesting because it's doing really well in America, but it's not doing so well in the rest of the world. And I think it's interesting because America gets a bad rap for being racist, and we deserve it. But I think the big difference is that America is such a diverse country that for every, you know, racist who's not going to see the movie out of protest because there's a black person in it, there's an equal number of black people who will come out and watch it, and also white supportive people and other racist supportive people who will come out and see it. And I think that's why, I mean, it's interesting when you look at this and say Black Panther, how, you know, your typical blockbuster movie gets about 70% of its total box office from overseas. And both Black Panther and this are getting most of it domestic. And but I think that's something you have to kind of deal with. You know, I mean, if you're in the movie industry, is it's like, yeah, there's racist people in there. And I don't even think it's so much racist. I think that in other countries, I thought a lot of people just aren't interested. Although, of course, you know, there were the controversies of the people on all the different, you know, review sites review bombing it. And it's interesting that that's even more common in other countries than it is in America, which I thought was odd. Wasn't what I expected, because certainly the racists in America are very, very vocal. So, you know, we have the whole anti-woke thing. So it's like, it's interesting, though, that, you know, that it's doing pretty well here. I mean, certainly it's one of the best, it's one of the highest box offices of any, especially debut of any movie in the post-COVID era.
Yeah, I was taking a look at the daily box office, and so far it is doing the same as Aladdin, a bit
right.
less than Aladdin, but just about the same.
But everything's also lower in the post-COVID era, because I think more people have gotten used to, you know, staying home and watching it on Disney Plus or whatever, and they know it's going to be there eventually. And I think in general, I mean, almost every movie since then has done less than the equivalent pre-COVID. I think people's just viewing habits change. You know, it's not as big a deal to go to the theater. There's the very big blockbuster movies are still doing really well, and especially ones with nostalgia, but in general, most movies are way down on what they were before. And there's a few exceptions, like, you know, Spider-Man obviously was like huge and a few others, but most movies just aren't doing as well because people, I mean, if you think about it, I don't want to go spend $25 to go see a movie, you know, and once you add in popcorn and whatever, you're talking like, it could be like, you know, a week's pay. You
know? I don't know why Disney do that. Certainly in some movies where you think, oh, I don't really want to watch it in the cinema, or I only need to wait 3 months and it'll be on Disney Plus, that's good.
Right.
But I don't know why they make that decision, because if you look at Avatar 2, that has just gone on to Disney Plus, and it was released back in December. So, you know, James Cameron or whatever deal he had milked out as much money as he could get before it went on Disney Plus.
I feel like I don't think it's so much an individual. I think more often it's just that, you know, I think they're still worried that people aren't going to the theaters as much, and they're not, and they want to get the money as soon as they can. So they put them on, you know, their streaming service. So they can get, at least get subscribers out of it. And I feel like that's becoming less and less the case now. I think as time is going on since COVID, I think, and more people are going to the theater, I think that more movies are staying out for a few months. And I think the exception is when a movie flops, they quickly put it on, they put it on streaming so they can get that money.
Yes.
Like, I don't think it's a, like, in general, I don't think it's on a case-by-case basis. I feel like they're just now trying to keep stuff off of streaming a little longer to give it some time, unless it proves itself to be doing badly. Then they're like, yes, let's jump on it, jump on it.
The, you know, hopefully it, you know, has a bit of legs, you know, and finishes on a decent total box office wise, but it's not looking like it because just of how much this movie needs to make. You know, reportedly it's almost $400 million spent on making the film, then advertising it. So quite hard to make money back on that.
But let's remember that with movies now, particularly Disney movies, there's so many other sources of revenue that have to be added into that math. You know, you've got how many subscribers does it bring to Disney Plus when it's on? How many people pay to watch it at home, whether it be on DVD or Blu-ray or on streaming or whatever? How many people buy how much merchandise? I mean, how many little girls are going to be wearing Little Mermaid t-shirts and costumes this year? I mean, you know, I think all that stuff has to be added in. How many people does it bring to the Disney parks, you know?
Well, certainly the merchandise, that would help it. But I think the DVD market is really, you know, just bought. Right. Rock bottom at the moment.
It's smaller, but it's still a significant part of the math still. I mean, even if it's at 10% or 5% of what it was a few years ago, that's still millions of dollars, which when you're talking about, you know, you need to make $400 million, if you can make another 20 from DVD sales, then that's, you know, that's something.
Well, it's something. It is something. But certainly,
plus, you know, again, the streaming is a big part of it.
I know, but how much? Well, I mean, it is a Disney movie, and it's hosted on their service, I suppose, but
right.
I don't know. Well, I just feel like a big source of revenue was that DVD video market, which is no longer really there. So I suppose that does explain why certain movies are no longer made, because they just would not make money. And I guess like rom-com type movies, you don't really see many of those these days.
Yeah, those don't do well at all. Well, I mean, what's interesting, people I think discount though how much money. I mean, yes, they're definitely not making as much money in streaming as they were thought, but I think a lot of that was because they spent so much money on so much direct to streaming content with all the TV shows and movies. But I mean, Disney Plus has almost 160 million subscribers. I mean, do the math there. That's a lot of money.
A lot of people. You know?
That's billions of dollars. So when you think, like, when you talk about how, okay, it needs to make $400 million, if even 1%, if they get a 1% jump in subscribers, if they get a million subscribers, that's, you know, $8 or $12 a month from all of those. So that adds up, you know, just 1 million. I'm sure more than a million people are going to subscribe to Disney just to see this movie, because it's certainly cheaper than buying the DVD or this, you know, the movie itself in rental.
Right enough.
So, I mean, I could definitely see, and this is one of those movies that I think, you know, 3 years from now, kids are going to be like, Mom, I want to watch Little Mermaid. It's one of those ones. So they might get months and months of subscriptions out of this, and that money adds up, and that's significant.
It would.
I mean, it helps that they can also watch every other Disney movie with that money, but then you have to kind of break it up. But I think this is going to be a big driver of people to it, so we'll see, I guess. Well, they probably won't tell us this, but
I'll certainly watch it on Disney Plus when it,
right,
hopefully there's not long of a wait, but you know, see later in the year when it goes on Disney Plus, I'll watch it again.
Right. Oh yeah, it's definitely one I will definitely watch it again at some point. And I'll keep going back to listen to the songs. And that might be what people do too. You know, you might have kids go, hey, I want to see Under the Sea.
Anything else we want to see on casting of Ariel?
I mean, when we talk about casting controversies, I'm surprised it wasn't more of a big deal, but the one that actually surprised me was that they went with a black woman for Eric's mother. I thought that would have gotten a lot more like hoo-ha out there, and I was pleasantly surprised that it didn't.
I had that written down to discuss that. So I hope I get this name right. Noma Dumazweni, who has been involved in her own race switching controversy before, if you know what that is.
I don't actually.
Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
Oh, okay.
She was cast as Hermione, and that caused a lot of heat. A lot of people did not like that.
I'm sure, yeah. I mean, the one advantage that this remake has with her is that at least it's not a recast, which is the excuse that a lot of racists make when they want to complain about things is, oh, but it's not like the original. Not that you cared because you don't watch the original, but, you know, it's like it's the excuse that racists use to, like, pretend they're not racist. And I think in her case, they couldn't make that complaint because she's not in the original. She's a completely new character.
And it's interesting that they brought in that backstory of, oh, Eric's adopted, to
right?
sort of explain.
Yeah. Where did that right, exactly. I wonder if that's the only reason they did that, was to explain mm-hmm. that or what, but at least he gets a backstory. And it does the other thing it does is it lets them plot-wise explain this tension between their country and Atlantis, you know, that oh, well, they're all of these shipwrecks, so.
And you know, for us watching, you know, big, you know, us being big Game of Thrones nerds, it's like they just found a baby, adopted him, right. And now he inherits the kingdom.
right, this baby out of nowhere becomes the, like, he's going to be the king at some point, theoretically. That's what you call a glow up, right? You go from being like almost dead to like the most powerful person in the area.
And not that it was explained in the movie, but I did think, I wonder if that had anything to do with when Ariel's mother was killed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting that they're very vague about that. I was thinking they were going to go the way that they went in Aladdin, where it was strongly hinted that Jafar was responsible for the death of his mother. I was wondering if that's where they were going to go with this, that, you know, maybe the humans killed, or even Ursula was responsible for. I mean, it's a kind of hinted that maybe Ursula is, because it seems like she was exiled around the same time. Mm-hmm. But we don't really. I was surprised that they didn't go into more depth on the background there. But
me too.
Probably for the best. I mean, we don't need the kids thinking about killing parents and stuff. There's already enough of that in every other freaking Disney movie. How many Disney characters have a mother that's alive?
That's true. Well, this one, I didn't really know about until I seen a YouTube video. This must have been maybe a week before I seen the movie, but there's an actor, Christian Navarro, who was in 13 Reasons Why. So he was not happy because, you know, supposedly Disney seen a lot of people of color in casting Eric. They were like, oh, anyone can come along. They seen audition many people. And then this actor was not happy because he, of course, auditioned himself. And right. Then he said, right, so after Disney seen all these people, they just went, oh, let's just hire another white guy, and made the claim that, oh, they probably didn't want to take that chance of having two people of color as main leads in the story, and then that would be a big financial disaster.
If anything, it's probably... I mean, I guess, you know, you'd have enough people who hate interracial relationships will be more upset with it being a white guy, I guess, that she's kissing. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, I think ultimately, I think the best thing, for as much as I support showing diversity whenever possible, I think there is something to be said for giving the job to the best person for the role. And I think in both cases, they did that. I mean, I think mm-hmm. he's really good as Eric and she's incredible as Ariel. I mean, anyone who complains
that they overlooked certain people to give it to Halle Bailey is crazy, because she's just so good. She embodies the character. Her voice is incredible. I mean, you certainly, if you're going to argue for merit, there's you can't argue that with her. Yeah, that she didn't deserve it. I mean, I'm sure there's other actors who would be better as Eric, but I thought he did a fine job, and he actually can sing, so at least with the aid of autotune.
And
but is there anything else you want to say about Halle Bailey's performance as Ariel, though? I heard some people said they didn't like her acting and they thought she didn't have enough nuance, although I thought she did great, and she definitely adds a lot of acting to her singing, which
I guess
if you only hear the soundtrack you won't get. But
well, certainly I loved the facial expressions. So, especially when she didn't have her voice, because, right, you know, having that ability to communicate with your eyes was right, really important. Yeah. So I thought she did that. And I laughed along at some of the looks that she gave to Scuttle, Sebastian, whoever. I did certainly loved the Kiss the Girl scene. That was a great one.
Oh, yeah.
That had a lot of laughs from the audience. And the one thing that really annoyed me, and it sort of annoyed me in the original movie too, is when they go through that transformation, turning her into a human, and then she's so far underwater,
right,
that she somehow swims all the way to the surface.
Realistically, she'd be dead.
Which happened in the original movie, but I thought at least Sebastian and Flounder helped to the top, whereas she'd just done that on her own.
Well, I mean, that's a change I like, because give her a little more agency, so that was mm-hmm. good. But Ron, is it realistic? Yeah, you know what? But we're talking about a Disney movie with talking crabs and magic, so mm-hmm. I'm not going to worry too much about realism. I mean, the whole story is pretty, could this actually happen? No. So having her be able to swim really well after swimming her whole life is probably fine, even though if you think logically, she doesn't know how to swim with feet.
And Eric, I did like his story, that, you know, they tried to make that parallel, that he feels trapped in this kingdom, that he's expected to be the prince and then eventually the king, that he needs to marry someone, whereas he just wants to go off, have adventures, see the sea. And of course, Ariel overhears this and thinks the same, that she's stuck underwater. She wants to be a human.
And not only that, but another part of that, though, that the people forget, is that I think was important, is that he not only wants the adventure, he wants to help his people. You know, if he's going to be the leader here, you know, he wants to help his people move into the new times and give them give them medical advances and whatever else they can get from other people. You know, I mean, from other cultures. And I think that was a really good addition, because it shows him being able to be a leader. But it also gives him that wanderlust and the longing for something he doesn't have, that gives him that like bond with Ariel. I mean, I definitely think that one of the best additions to this is, well, his entire character, because he has like no character at all in the original. He's just a handsome man who's, you know, whatever, that they fall in love with because he's handsome. Here, like, they not only give him a character and a personality that's very likable, but they give him things in common with Ariel that they can bond over, you know. Especially like, I really, really liked the scene where he's going over the globe with her and all of his, and his little room, like she has of all his trinkets and thing and his souvenirs. Like I liked that whole scene a lot, because it gave them that whole bonding bit, and it actually gave me a reason to believe that these people might love each other. And a reason to kiss the girl. Although he doesn't know yet that she has these things in common with him, but she does at least. I also like
with Ariel, the whole thing with Ursula, the whole, you know, deal they make isn't just about, oh, but I love him. I love him. I want to be with him. I love him. It's more of her wanting to be with humans in general, mm-hmm. and explore this new world that she doesn't understand. And I like that that's very much more the motivation here. Although they do come to love each other, it's not the goal, you know? Even if it's the goal of to get to kiss the girl, but...
Oh, just one more thing about Ariel. this is a change that I didn't mind at all, but when I was at, of course, the screening I went to, and I was there with two of my friends, and one of my friends, Lauren, she was really upset and has said multiple times since we watched the movie that, oh, I don't like that, you know, that scene when Triton turns Ariel into a human,
right,
after that whole resolution at the end, and she comes out with the big sparkly dress. She just did not like that there was not a similar thing in this movie.
Yeah, I guess a lot of girls loved the sparkly dress. And we're mad that was gone, but I didn't even remember it. Maybe because I'm a boy, I don't remember it from the original. Like I looked at it since that, and I was like, oh yeah, that was there. I don't.
And the story, I would have liked to have known more about this story of who his parents are, how did he somehow become, you know, discovered, you know, shipwrecked and all that stuff, but I think it was fine on its own without knowing more detail into that. But it was a strange choice that they would, you know, leave something open-ended like that,
right? It's kind of weird, like they were like trying to give him more depth and a backstory, but then they're like, but let's not go into this too much. Like, we'll mention it, but let's not dwell on it. And probably because, I mean, it's probably pretty dark. I mean, let's face it, I'm assuming they didn't just send the kid off to sea by himself. So presumably his parents were with him in this shipwreck and died. So I'm guessing they didn't want to traumatize the kids too much. So they jumped into that. They jumped past it quickly. But it still is weird as an adult, at least, watching and being like, so wait, you're not going to talk about this at all? But speaking of Eric, one thing I do have to point out, particularly at the end, was even though he gets a lot less screen time in the new one, is the dog Max. I thought it was amazing. Yeah. I'm assuming that's a real dog, not a CGI dog. But if it is a real dog,
CGI.
But I'm not sure. But either way, he moved exactly. His body motions were exactly like the original one. There's particularly scenes at the end where he runs over to Eric, and I was just like, oh my god, that's exactly the same body movements. It was like if it was a real dog, that was incredibly impressive. But even his CGI, it was still pretty impressive. Although he's definitely gets a lot less screen time in this than he does in the other than like a quick look here and there.
I went on to TikTok, so this was maybe like a week before I went to see the movie, and I went on to TikTok, and that scene where Vanessa, Ariel and Vanessa have a fight, and she throws the locket on the ground, and it snaps, and then she gets her voice back. So that was on TikTok, and I thought, well, that looks quite good, quite, you know, similar to the original film, the way that they have filmed it. But then the next time I go on to TikTok, it feels like the entire movie has been uploaded there, just like split into the 30-second clips to
probably
2 minutes.
It probably has. That's the way they do it now. You know, you could probably find the whole movie on YouTube.
I mean, on YouTube is, you know, understandable, but just could not imagine sitting through an entire two-hour movie watching over 100
seconds. Hey, people do it, though.
I'm sure they do.
Save some $20.
True.
I just like everything they did with Eric. I thought it was really good, and I think he's fine. And you could definitely see how, like, she could fall in love with him. Like, I think he gets character here, and the actor itself is quite charming. And I think his little, like, his little British accent there just helps make him a little sexier. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not, like, I mean, you can't help notice the British accent, which of course brings up the interesting, okay, so where is this supposed to take place? Their island is presumably, I mean, I would guess it's supposed to be kind of Caribbean, but I don't know. I mean, I guess so. It could be. I mean, unless you're going with it's Norse, I don't know. But either way, he has a British accent and no one else in the kingdom does. Although I guess you could explain it that he was, you know, he came to them in the shipwreck as a baby. So maybe they were from England. I don't know. But it's very obvious that he's British through his whole accent, and particularly wild uncharted waters.
But also, if he was, I'm guessing, a baby when this happened.
Right, he wouldn't have, an accent. Right, I know. But then again, in you know, a lot of American television in particular, British accent is kind of a shortcut for saying someone's posh.
That's true. Well, it's interesting.
He is the prince.
Do you want to, I guess, discuss Crichton?
I really liked him. I thought particularly in the movie, I didn't, but I mean, you're not supposed to, so that's fine. You know, he definitely, like, if anything, I feel like they went overboard in making him look crazy at the beginning. But then at the end, I really liked the vulnerability and the realizing the sadness in him. I thought he carried it really well. Like, he brought me to tears a couple of times in the end there. I really liked his performance.
I was a bit sad because it felt like it wasn't just that they were going, you know, Ariel, Eric, that they were going off on this adventure and they'll be back in 2 weeks' time. It sort of felt like we'll never see them again. And
yeah, you
know, Ariel will never see her father again. That made me a bit sad.
But then they also did the whole "we are here for you" scene at the end, you know, where you see all the people seeing them off and like, we'll be waiting for you to come back. So, I mean, I do definitely feel I liked all of the everything he does in this. And I think he added a vulnerability that isn't as much there in the original. One of the advantages of having a real actor instead of an animated character. Mm-hmm. But I thought he was really good in the role. One of my friends when I posted on Facebook about it was like, no, she hated him. She thought he just phoned it in. But I really liked his performance a lot.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Right. I can't say anything about any of the other mermaids, male or female, is that, I mean, none of them had a moment to even do anything.
No.
I mean, they got like a couple of decent actors like Simone Ashley from Bridgerton in it, and she doesn't do a damn thing. I don't even remember if she got a line.
I didn't even notice that was her. I know who that
is.
It was her voice.
I mean, could you even name any of the of her sisters? I couldn't.
And because they had that whole backstory where Eric was found to explain why he has a black mother, then are we to just guess that because Triton has seven daughters, all different colors and nationalities,
right. I know, right?
You know, he played about.
he's pretty Zeus-like in this world, I think. You know, he goes for every woman he can find. Although, I don't know. I mean, but I guess that is very parallel with Zeus, I guess. So maybe that's probably what they were going for.
I, much like the original movie, that Sebastian is pretty much a standout character. I think so anyway. I felt like Sebastian in this movie, I laughed so many times at the looks that he gave, the things that he would say, that moment where, of course, the sun's going down and Ariel finally gets his voice back and he just says, just kiss. I loved that scene.
Right.
So yeah, Sebastian, standout character for this movie too. I felt like Scuttle, I felt was good. a good addition. Well, I mean, I know Skittles in their original movie, but of course they've changed the sex, right. That it's a female rather
and
than
the
a male.
Species and the species.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because you know why they did that, right? So that because the what I forget what the new what the animal is now, but it, that animal actually goes underwater and can dive.
Can, yeah.
And they did that specifically so to explain that to basically for the change that Ariel has not been going to shore very often. She hasn't before. She doesn't have to talk to Scuttle. And the original she does, so that's where she sees all them. So I think that's why they changed that, was so to explain that, like, this is now her first real contact with actual people. But I think, in general, I think the tough part for me about all three of them, Sebastian, Scuttle, and Flounder, was mm-hmm. that it was just weird having them be real. You know, that, like I said, that was another thing that decision to make them photorealistic makes it, I don't know, like Flounder, the original Flounder was adorable and you loved him. And on this one, yes. it's kind of hard. I mean, admittedly, I keep fish, but, you know, it still was just weird to, like, have Flounder be her best friend and talk. And even, and like, so, like, I think it made, I mean, even Sebastian just looked weird to me as a real crab with this voice coming out of it, of this awesome voice of David Diggs. But, like, it was just weird to me, you know, although he sings really well.
Yes.
I mean, Awkwafina can't sing, but I think that her, or at least in this, she doesn't. But then again, the character's not supposed to either, so that worked mm-hmm. fine. We should probably get into Ursula now. So.
Yep. Well, I found it interesting that she says very early on that Triton is her brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which,
that was
if I know in my mind, right, so I'm watching the movie and she says that, and in my mind I'm thinking that's not something that they've just brought into this new movie. Yep. I feel like there's something I couldn't remember if maybe it was in one of the sequels that
had. Yeah, I think that was in one of the sequels, and I think it was also in the cartoon that was on Disney Channel way back in the days or whatever it was.
I'm thinking more that I might have watched a documentary where it's something that they toyed with as an idea, but then scrapped it in the original movie.
No, they definitely did bring it up in one of the sequels and in the cartoon. Mm-hmm. I was reading about that online. They definitely did. But they definitely put it forefront here. And I think it adds a new dynamic that I kind of like. She's not just some random evil witch, but she has a reason for hating Triton and, you know, him exiling her. Imagine being exiled by your family. I mean, we don't really, the only thing is I wish they'd given us a reason. I mean,
I know it's like you were saying that it adds more depth to the story that, right. You know, there's a reason why she hates Triton that she's exiled, right. But they still didn't tell us why she was exiled.
Exactly.
What did she do?
Right.
But aside from all the stuff that she does and the deals she makes with people, I suppose that's pretty bad. Maybe I guess the way that the story's there is that it's trying to say afterwards she was like that rather than before.
Right. Like, I mean, I think one of the things that Disney's been trying to do more recently with a lot of stuff is give the villains a little more depth and a little more gray area. You know, they're not, she, like in the original, she's basically just an evil witch who likes taking people's souls. Ha 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 ha. Mm-hmm. You know, in this, there's a sadness to her that I think adds a lot of depth to her. And a darkness that's not just evil dark. It's like there's a darkness in her and that definitely comes out in Poor Unfortunate Souls a lot. I mean, her performance in that is just incredible, right? I mean, her no one knew she could sing like that, you know? I mean, everyone was prepared to hate her. And I think, again, she and Halle Bailey both, like, just won over all the critics from the moment they first heard her sing. And there's so much nuance. Again, watching some of those like vocal coaches react, you could see like they're all like, I'm going to hate this, but let's watch it. And then they're like, wow. And they're just blown away. She does such a good job in that. Plus her acting, too. You know, you think it's just going to be silly and light, but she's good. She's really good. I also really liked how with her in particular, but also with Ariel a bit, the whole how they made her it look like she was underwater, particularly during Poor Unfortunate Souls. Like she says that she had this really cool wig she liked, but they didn't actually let her use it because they wanted to use CGI hair so that her hair would like float naturally like it would in water, along with her tentacles.
I read that cost $150,000 to have right? that here.
And then they didn't even use it.
He had to wear like a skull cap
so they could CGI in the hair. But I mean, Ursula's just really good in this. And Melissa McCarthy knocked it out of the park. I think everyone says that the two women really make this movie. Oh, and by the way, one other thing you had asked me about before, should talk about the cameo, is I like that they had Jodie Benson, the original Ariel, is the one who gives her the dingle hopper.
I had such a strong feeling that that would happen because Jodie Benson is, you know, that's part of her legacy, right? That she's, you know, it's not just some job she done back when she was in her 20s. She has, you know, she's done the sequels, she's done various, sort of Comic-Con type stuff. And, you know, it's, she's built a career over being the voice of Ariel. So I had a feeling that she would be doing something, a cameo. That's why I did ask.
And of all the things to do, having her literally hand her the dingle hopper, you know, the fork, it was like, I think, so appropriate, right? Of all the scenes.
I feel like if Pat Carroll didn't die, you know, a few years ago, we would have seen something from her too.
Probably. But a little late now.
Yes.
But
oh, and one of the, I guess, the most memorable moments for me is when, you know, the little statue miniature figure mermaid, and Eric sees my little mermaid.
Yeah.
I really, really loved that scene.
That was cute. And they kept coming back to that statue, especially at the end, you know. I mean, if we're going to talk about changes, one thing we have to talk about is the whole change to the ending. I mean, like Aladdin and others, they definitely, like, puffed out the ending and made it a lot bigger and more epic and more grand. But, of course, the biggest change is that Ariel is the one who actually kills Ursula. And I think...
Yes.
I like that. You know, it's like, I don't need no boy to save me from the monster. I can handle it.
That's one of the biggest criticisms of Ariel as a character, that, and not just Ariel, a lot of the Disney princesses.
Absolutely.
Is that they need someone to save them, a man, most likely a man to save them. Right. And Ariel is one of the biggest culprits of that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was a nice change to see that. I guess in the original, she's in this tidal wave, and then Eric, of course, steers the boat and kills, of course, Ursula, whereas that was reversed in this movie.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I like that a lot. I'm sure some people will complain, but some people are going to complain about anything. I think at some point you have to, like, just ignore those people, you know, and just do what you think is right. And I think it works. I think it works both from a story point of view, you know, because this movie is about her coming into her own. And I think from a story point of view, that works better. But also, you know, from a modernization point of view, it's a better message. So I think it's nice when those two things go hand in hand, when it's not forced. Like, it fits, and I think it totally fits, particularly this character of Ariel. Because, I mean, in the original, she's more a victim, with everyone else kind of making her do things and stuff. Yes. Here, she gets to some more agency, so that's good. And she's not just love-struck. She actually has a will and goals of her own and stuff, so that's nice. But so does Eric.
That's true. One thing that I was going to talk about is just the whole experience of watching the movie. So I know that you've not watched it in the cinema yet, or might not, but I don't know if you have these in America, but do you have, or at your local cinema, do you have 4D experiences that you can watch in the cinema?
Occasionally. There's only a few theaters that have it, and I live in downtown Boston, and the only ones around here that have that are like out in the burbs.
So right.
I think the last thing, I think I saw one of the Star Wars movies in that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I had booked the tickets, and this was for the 4DX. So the two friends that I went with, we went to see Titanic a few months ago because they re-released Titanic in 4DX. So we went to see that. So booked the movie, and unfortunately, because of course you watch the movie in 3D, and then of course they do things like they splash water on you and shake your chair and stuff. But usually when I've gone to see a 4DX film, so I've gone to see 3 so far, and the first two I went to see, they would just hand you 3D glasses as you walk in. Even though when you book the tickets, it says, do you want to pay for glasses? And I've always just said no. And then
they give it to you anyways. That's
they give you the glasses anyway, right? So, and I remember when I went to see Avatar 2, I thought, oh no, I'll just buy them at the when I go to see the movie. And I even asked the person for the 3D glasses, and he was just, the staff member was just like, oh no, go get them over there, and you don't need to pay for them. So that was fine. Then a friend of mine went to see Avatar 2 the next week, but he paid for his glasses when he booked the tickets online. And I said, you know, you didn't need to do that, because they would have just given you the glasses. And then the same happened when we went to see Titanic, that, you know, just here's your 3D glasses. But right. Then this movie, even though I probably have 3 or 4 pairs of glasses at home, when I left the house, forgot to bring them, and then I was sort of I was like half an hour away from my house, and I thought, oh, no. I forgot those glasses. I bet they'll charge me now, and they did. It was £1.25 for the 3D glasses, so it wasn't bad, but it was still annoying knowing that I've already got those glasses at home.
In America, at least, as far as I know, we don't actually, they don't ever charge for glasses. I've never had that happen, but I think they bake that into the cost. Like if you go to book the regular movie, it's like $15. And if you go to book the 3D, it's like 18. So it's kind of baked into it.
Oh, it's the opposite here, because they charge you more anyway. And then they charge you for 3D glasses. Because when I looked at the pricing for it, it was, you know, if we went to see the 2D movie, it was $11.99 a ticket. Right. But then if you went to see the 3D film, then it would have been, I think, about £14-15 maybe. And then the showing that we went to see 4DX, it was £18.19 plus there's your booking fee, and then you pay for the glasses.
They'll just milk you wherever they can, I guess. Well, luckily, that hasn't come here. I have not seen that here at all. So.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, the experience of it, they put on, of course, the trailers before the movie started. And the first trailer came on. And it starts with music because it's like a music-based film. But then it cut to the character saying something, and instantly I was like, there's something not right here. I could not hear a single word that woman was saying on screen. And then the same thing happened with the next trailer. So I said to my friend, oh God, I hope they fix this by the time the film starts.
So was it like headphones or something you're supposed to wear? Or?
No, it was... just there was some problem with the audio, that the sound system, there was something wrong with it, because the characters on screen were talking in really low, muffled voices.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing happened with the next trailer. And I said, you know, probably someone's already said something. But I said to my friends, I'll go say to the staff. But right. Then as I get up, walk by this other woman, and she says, oh, don't worry, I've already said something. I said, okay. Sat back down. Okay. Then the movie starts. They've still not fixed. They've still not fixed the audio.
Oh, no.
So we watch along. I mean, you can still watch it. That you can hear what they're saying, but there's just, you know, it's not.
I'm guessing probably the center channel wasn't working, because the center channel is usually where the talking is usually.
Mm-hmm. So we can still hear what the characters are saying, but it just doesn't have that same impact. And then, you know, my friend says to me, oh, don't worry, I know you wouldn't normally see, but I'll complete. but then, in the end, the sound did fix eventually. So maybe halfway through the movie, it was much better. Yes. And you could hear everything at that point. And then as we left, there was a staff member just asking, oh, did you find any problems in that screening? And yes. And they gave us a ticket for like a free entry to another movie.
Oh, there you go.
So it made up for the 3D glasses debacle. Because I had a feeling that in my mind I was thinking, all right, okay, what do we do here? Because I still want to watch the movie. I know the audio is not the best, but I still want to watch it. And right. You know, if you went up and said, after you've watched the entire two-hour film, by the way, that audio wasn't working, then they'd be like, well, you watched the movie.
I feel like there's legitimate complaints and there's not legitimate complaints. And I feel that sounds legitimate, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly as a waiter, I see my share of complaints about legitimate things and illegitimate things. But like, and there definitely is a sense of eat it all, what are you going to say? But I think if you have a fair and legitimate complaint, there's nothing wrong with that. And not being able to hear the movie very well is a big complaint.
That's true.
Especially a musical. You know?
Anything else you want to discuss before we then do a final rating and then end the podcast?
Okay. So one thing I was going to say is, when we talk about changes, we talked about how the ending itself was changed, you know, with her. But I think that whole scene being bigger was a lot better. But I also like that they added like a good at least five to 10 minutes after, you know, Ursula dies, some of which is in the original. But I mean, like they just skirted over the wedding really quick. But I really liked that whole ending scene, you know, particularly the bit with Triton, you know, talking to her and then making the decision with the other animals to like give her her feet and let her go back to shore to make her a you know, a human. And I really loved the whole like send off. Like, it definitely brought me to tears when they were going off and gonna leave, and Triton particularly, him being so sad about it. But you know, the whole like, yes, we're all here for you, that whole bit at the end I thought was just really powerful and worked really well, and I really liked it a lot.
I did like that the, instead of after Ursula is dead and Ariel's on the shore trying to wake up Eric, and that's when, of course, Triton turns Ariel back into a human. I liked that they sort of had a break and both Ursula, Triton and Ariel go back underwater and then talk about it first, and then
I mean, there was a part of me that was like, are they really gonna not give us the happy ending? Is she just going back home? Like, because both of them get their moment with their parents of no, this was never meant to be, like, and especially like Eric's mother saying it to him. I was just like, wait, they're not going there, are they? They can't end a Disney movie this way. And of course they didn't, but...
They didn't.
God, how much would that have sucked if that was the end of it? Like, if you cut out the last, like, 4 minutes, how much would that have sucked if that was the ending?
I could maybe understand why it wasn't doing so well at the box office.
Right. But,
Well, the good thing is that it looks like most people really did like it. I mean, it got a cinema score, which is the one like scientific survey they do of people who've seen the movie, and they actually do it at the theaters. So you have to have been someone who saw it instead of just lying. You know, it had an A. And if you go by the verified reviews on, I think, IMDb, or one of those, or Rotten Tomatoes, it definitely had it was like a 90 something percent. It had a lot. If you go by the unverified, it was like 50%. So the people who didn't see the movie didn't like it. Well, who cares?
I think it has dipped a bit. So when it was first, maybe within the week of its release, or maybe a few days before it was being released, yeah, it was a high score, something like 90. But I think I've seen a score of like 68%, I'm sure.
Well, there's two. There's the audience, and then there's the reviews.
Yes.
The reviews were lower, but I mean, every one of the Disney remakes has done like middling, because you have a lot of people who just are purists about it. You know, never mind the controversies. But, you know, I think there's a lot who, and then there's a lot of people who feel, what's the point of doing these remakes? So the reviews are always mixed on all of these. But I think the audience score has been consistently high, although in other countries they've had to tweak it because of the review bombing by people who never saw the movie. But it's like, you know what, I'm sorry, if you were the kind of person who's mad about a black woman being in it, you're probably not the target audience for Little Mermaid, and we're never going to go see it anyways, right? I mean,
I've just taken a look, it's 67%, but the audience score is 94%.
Right, that's what I was saying. So yeah, yes, the reviews are always bad, the official reviews, but the audience score, which is ultimately what matters, did the people who saw this movie like it, seem to be pretty consistently high. Of the people who didn't see the movie, they're not, but who cares? You didn't see the movie. So what would you give it as your score?
So I would rate, I'm trying to think back, because when I was having that discussion with the two friends I went to see the movie with, they asked me this, and I'm trying to think what I said then. I think that one of my friends, Gillian, had said 9 out of 10. And I later said, oh, you know, for me, I think it was good. It was a good, really good movie. I think I would have said 8. Yeah, 8 out of 10, or 4 out of 5, of course.
But what would you give the original?
I think that with the original movie, because it wasn't ever, I guess, like a favorite of mine. I mean, it was very good and like probably in the top 5 Disney movies, but wasn't like towards the top of the list. That for the original movie, I would say I would give it an equal rating, 4 out of 5.
There you go. Yeah, I would probably have to say so for the original. It's tough on how you want to look at it. Like, if you want to talk about my emotional attachment and my first view seeing it, I probably would have given it a 5 out of 5. I'd say looking back on it, never mind the problems, you know, in the messaging, but also, I mean, the animation is not great. And I mean, it's still simplistic. I probably would give it a 4 because of that now. I think at the time I would have given it a 5. This, I'm pretty close to the top on this. I'd give it at least a 4.5. Liked it a lot. I mean, I think it does everything the original does well, and then more, and it gives character and motivation, and, you know, doesn't have the problematic messaging. I mean, I think all around, I think they did as well as you could ask of anyone from this. Like, I don't see how you could do it better, you know, other than the original. But, you know, and again, I think it improved on the original. So I would definitely give this at least a 4.5. And I'm tempted to go full on 5 because I really did like it a lot. And I thought it was impactful. I think it's something that's going to, I think generations of kids are going to look back on this and like be, this is my favorite movie, which is great. You know, especially little girls. And I mean, of course, the impact for little black girls is going to be amazing. And all in all, I think it was, you know, there's a lot of people who ask, why bother? And I mean, of course, the obvious answer is because we're going to make a lot of money. But I think this, particularly the improvements in this, really justified why they made this. And I think that's been the case of most of the remakes.
in the case that I didn't make. I think ultimately it's a better movie. So that's great.
Well, it's been great to talk to you, David, and give our views on this movie. So I know that Peter Pan, that's one that's recently been remade, and that had a lot of bad reviews because they also had a re-switch with, Tinkerbell. I've not watched that movie, have you?
I have not yet. I'm more into the musicals, and I mean, there's a little music in it, but not really.
Ah.
And that's not one of my favorites. My favorite is this era, so...
Oh, yeah,
And we've now pretty much seen all the big ones, so... Although they didn't, Pocahontas wasn't a musical. Which is why I probably haven't watched it yet.
I guess this was one that possibly could have done the best. So that's one thing that I find weird, that they're still planning, they've got plans now for our Hercules live action. But with this one doing not so well, I wonder how that'll alter plans.
I mean, the thing is, let's stop saying that. It's doing really well. It's taken in over $1/3 of a billion in 2 weeks. It's doing fine. I mean, it's not doing the level of some of the others. But again, nothing in the post-COVID era is. So, I mean,
Avatar 2, Spider-Man.
Right. But there's two movies out of how many hundred movies have come out since then. Everything is doing lower. And even those movies did worse than the originals, you know? Well, Spider-Man.
I know that you could look at, there's other avenues, there's other revenue streams, but I think it's the way that it's reported. Like, you'll see a newspaper article and it'll talk about the movie and they'll say, they'll highlight the box office, how it's done.
The domestic box office of this movie is high. The domestic box office of this movie is doing great. I mean, there's a few movies that have managed to capture something and done really well. I mean, I think Spider-Man was the biggest exception, but that was because, it was the greatest hits. We had all the Spider-Man in it, and that's what people went for. And I mean, Avatar, it's been so long, so I get that. But really, there haven't been that many. I mean, I guess right now Super Mario's doing pretty well, but nothing's doing remember that the year that Aladdin came out, Disney alone had a dozen movies that made $1 billion that one year, including, of course, Avengers, which did incredible, I mean, I think in this era, movies don't make as much as they used to. But yet at the same time, this movie, as of I think today, has already surpassed the international box office of the original in just 2 weeks. It's already made more than the original made with multiple releases over years around the world. It's made more than that just domestically. I mean, that's pretty good. I mean, admittedly, movies make more now, and we've had inflation and stuff. But I mean, it's already $1/3 of a billion. That's a lot of money. I mean, part of the problem is that they're spending a lot more money to make movies.
Exactly.
Now.
If this was a case where they had spent maybe $100 million, then it was actually looking like a good success, but because they've spent a lot more than that, then
I think that's the real question then, is should they be spending this much on each movie now? I mean, I think that's the thing they're learning with streaming TV is, they're spending, for a while they were spending all this money on these shows, and they're realizing they're not making as much as they used to. And you kind of have to, I think when you're talking about the financial impact of these movies these days, I think you have to take into account all aspects of it. And one aspect is maybe you don't need to spend $250 to make a kid's movie about a mermaid. I think it goes into what expectations,
That's true.
I mean, it's made more than most movies have in the last couple of years domestically. And it's still doing pretty well overseas, not great, But domestically, it's doing
great. That's my hope, that even though it's had a bad start, that maybe, certainly there's Japan still to come. That's, I think, the only country it's still to be released in. So my hope is that it does well there, and that, bumps up the international gross. And I do. Yeah,
there's a lot of there's a lot of Disney fans in Japan too. Yeah, I mean, like I said, exactly. the Tokyo Disney Sea, the second Disney park there, has a whole Little Mermaid land. So.
Oh yeah.
Overall, I mean, I it was a good movie. It's gotten good word of mouth, which is always good for a movie continuing to do well when it gets good word of mouth, which it definitely has. I mean, it's definitely overall made a splash on social media. People are loving it. People are doing reactions and how much they loved it. And nostalgia has value, too.
It does. Yeah, overall, I enjoyed it. I'll certainly watch it again. I suspect that, you know, my boyfriend, he buys tons of DVDs. Not just DVDs, but like
you can, the one.
You've got this service called Buy and Keep on our TV, so you can just buy movies and you get the digital copy. He has like hundreds of movies. So I suspect he'll buy this one anyway, even though it does annoy me because he buys these movies, he never watches them himself, and then it's like, why have you bought that when we could just watch it on TV? You know, it eventually comes to Sky Movies, Disney Plus, Netflix, wherever, and we could have watched it there rather than him spending like £13 on something that, you know, it would have been available on Disney Plus anyway.
Collector's mentality.
But certainly, yeah, if it's Disney Plus or on this, you know, if it's bought on DVD, I'll certainly be watching it again.
Well, of course, Disney's probably going to do what they're doing now with a lot of things is vaulting it. Like, it'll only be available certain years or certain
months. I forgot about the Disney Vault.
Yeah, they're bringing that back for Disney Plus, so they'll probably do it this. And I wonder if that'll work. I don't know if it'll work for them, but it could. Like, it might be like, and it'll be interesting to see if in March of next year they put this on there for 2 months. If during those months they get a lot more subscribers.
Well, I remember when it must have been last year they put Avatar back into the cinema, and Disney Plus conveniently took that off their Disney Plus service.
Of course. Still weird thinking about that as a Disney movie, because it's not. Well, the second one is, but...
Oh, yeah, because it was a Fox movie, and then,
right,
you know, they bought Fox. So you can follow along on theokpodcast.com. Of course, you can download the episode on Spotify, on iTunes. If you want to message us, then... Of course, you can go to @theokpodcast on Twitter. And then, of course, we've got a Facebook page, so follow us if you please can. And of course, most importantly, we have a Discord discussion group, so theokpodcast. So if you wish, you can join the discussions. We have general chats about TV shows, movies. Of course, we organize all of our podcasts through Discord. So if you want to join, then possibly you could join.
Yep, we welcome your joining us. I'll definitely be watching Heartstopper right away. Last time I had to wait because I was watching it with my friend Michael. And, well, I don't think he's going to be coming over here anytime soon.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll probably just watch it on my own, so I'll watch it pretty quickly after it airs. So I don't know how long you need to watch it, but we'll figure it out. Maybe we can get together some of the old
crew. I will have watched it within the first few days. Okay. I don't think I would do like a full binge in one day, but probably over a weekend I'll have watched it.
Yeah, I'll probably have it done within a week, so maybe we can pull out who was on the last one. Was Marie on it with us, I think?
Marie, yeah.
And Jock, was Jock there? Or was that this? Was that Aladdin?
I think you're thinking It's a Sin.
Maybe that's it. Okay.
Yeah, but Jock wasn't on Heartstopper.
Okay. Well, we'll see how we do. Okay, well, I look forward to hearing us again and seeing it online. And I'll talk to you again soon.
Goodbye.
Thank you again.
No problem. Bye.
How do I hang up again? I always forget how to do that.